Getting sick while either pregnant or breastfeeding totally sucks. Not only is it hard to grow or care for young children while you're not feeling well, it can be tricky to navigate how to even support yourself while you're ill. You may have questions like which herbs, homeopathics, and supplements are best for which scenarios, or will these things I take even affect my baby? These are all valid concerns that I hope to answer. In this episode, we break down some important things to know about the physiological states of pregnancy and breastfeeding as it pertains to immune health, as well as prep you with several practical tools and ideas to implement so that you know exactly what you can be doing should you start to feel run down. Let's go.
Welcome to Healthy as a Mother, the podcast for becoming and being a mother, with your co-hosts, Dr. Leah Gordon and Dr. Morgan McDermott, two naturopathic doctors who get it.
Each week, we teach you how to be the healthiest mother you can be, from fertility and preconception to pregnancy and birth prep, through postpartum and throughout motherhood, empowering you with the natural health guidance and education you're not getting elsewhere, so you can confidently navigate the broken system at large.
The real, the raw, the untalked about. And remember, this information is not intended to diagnose, treat, or manage any disease. Always consult with your doctor before making any changes.
Mastitis got you down? Unfortunately, I've been there way too many times. The pain, fever, chills, I'll never forget those feelings. And as we do, we tend to take our pain points and transform them into something beautiful that can help other people. And that's just what I've done with the creation of my mastitis manual. Inside this jam-packed 30-page ebook, I really go nitty-gritty into explaining all the details you need to know about mastitis to get back on your feet and hopefully without antibiotics. The mastitis manual explains the different types of mastitis, when antibiotics might be appropriate and when they might not be, various ways to manage it naturally, and how and why it happens, whether that be from a depletion standpoint, or perhaps your baby slept too long, or perhaps a backpack strap pressed too hard on your breast. I really poured myself into this, knowing that if it helps just one person feel less alone or get relief, I am a happy camper. Check out the show notes to grab your copy of my mastitis manual.
Okay, so today we are going to be talking all about immune support during pregnancy and breastfeeding. And Dr. Morgan, as always, is an expert on these seasons, and I am in this season, so we can both share some knowledge on this. But I think a lot of women feel like there's not a lot they can do during pregnancy and breastfeeding to support their immune system, whether preventing or while they are sick. And in the conventional world, there really isn't a ton that you can do. But in the natural medicine world, there's a lot. So we're going to dive into that today. And why don't you start us off?
Okay. Yeah. So I think that it is something that people don't really consider until they're in that position where maybe they have a cold while they're pregnant or they have allergies or they get a UTI or they have something that's going on with them while they are pregnant. And they're like, oh, wait a minute. Especially probably most listeners of this particular podcast are in the world of natural health and using alternative remedies, therapies, you know, conventional, outside of the conventional system in terms of how they're going to heal and manage illness. And so they're like, wait, what can I actually do? Are herbs safe? What about homeopathy? What about this, that, and the other thing? And so totally understandable, right? And also then there's only ever pharmaceuticals that are presented as things that we can do, or just time and waiting. And, you know, that's valid as well. Sometimes things do just take time and they can linger for a long time. But there is several known herbs, homeopathics, nutraceuticals, supplements, et cetera, that we know that are safe in pregnancy and breastfeeding to support the immune system. Then there's a lot more that are on the kind of gray side where they're used clinically, but maybe on the label, it'll have to still have the disclaimer. We have to understand that pregnancy is and breastfeeding, but more pregnancy, it's considered a protected population. So a protected population means that it's unethical to do a lot of research on these people because whatever we're doing might affect the unborn baby, right? And so it's not just one person that we are potentially negatively impacting, it's two. And we decided a long time ago in research that we weren't going to put people into that position, although we used to do things, really gnarly things to pregnant women, and it was really messed up, you know? So we try not to do that anymore, thankfully. So then when we're deciding on how do we give advice about the way that somebody can protect their immune system or help support it during something like a flu, it's going to be a mix of several things. There will be some research that's involved in that. There will be some clinical judgment. So just what you've been using in practice and what we have learned from mentors and preceptorships and working with other doctors, working underneath things, continuing education credits, et cetera. There's a lot of that. And then there's also this historical context and the blend of history and anthropology and how do we do things back in the day? And of course, you know, when we were using only plants of the earth to help support ourselves and food as medicine a long time ago before the pharmaceutical industry began, that's what it was. And there was, of course, the medicine people in the village. And yeah, I'm sure that they, at some point, they made some mistakes, just like as we have. But they learned over the course of time what can be helpful and what's safe and effective. And so we have now this body of knowledge. And I created a course about this because I would get asked all the time. I would get asked, mm-hmm. like, you know, should I have a cold, or I'm battling UTI or allergies? And what can I do? What can I take? Is this safe? Is it going to get in my milk? Is it going to get to the baby? And so I took the time to you know, organize all my thoughts about that so that there's one pointed resource now that I can show people and say, hey, if this is something that's happening for you, go ahead and take this. I think it's valuable too, because if you're on the path of having multiple children, you're going to be pregnant and breastfeeding for like many years of your life, many years. So having this kind of information and knowing how to care for yourself so you can support yourself in a way to either just have like better experience and, you know, less symptoms and start to feel more energy, because taking care of children while you're sick is honestly like, it should be illegal. I say that all the time. And obviously I'm joking when I'm saying that. I know that it can't be illegal, but it is the rudest, meanest thing to have to take care of children while you feel ill. It sucks. Mm-hmm. And then usually they're sick too, so they need more of you, but then you, it's just, it's horrible. Yeah. So, if not for that point, then to also just be able to help catch things early and avoid the need for heavier medicines like antibiotics, because sometimes we get pneumonias or bronchitis that, you know, becomes bacterial, or we have a UTI that now is not going to respond to anything natural and it does necessitate antibiotics, and there's a time and a place. But there's just a lot of things we can do before that. So I wanted to kind of like give that background of where we're coming at, why this is important. And to also understand that, yeah, is there going to be a randomized double blind control trial of every single herb that shows that it's completely safe and effective in pregnancy or the state of breastfeeding? No.
Yeah.
We will have to lean into what we know is working clinically. It's also going to change over time. And so it's everybody's, you know, it's up to your own education. This is for an educational purposes situation. Maybe your MD is not going to know about these things. Your OBGYN probably has not heard of any of this stuff. So if you bring it to them, they're probably going to be like, no, I wouldn't do that. Here's the script for some other pharmaceutical that you can take, because there is to some degree going to be research that is showing that that is, you know, a category B in pregnancy. The categories for pharmaceuticals are, you know, based on the safety and efficacy, right? So it'll be like category A, B, and it kind of goes down the list of, does it impact the fetus negatively? Do we have good information to show that it's maybe more beneficial to the mother than the negative impact on the fetus? So that would be the case for something like aspirin. Sometimes women are prescribed low dose aspirin during their pregnancies to prevent blood clotting. Maybe because you have a blood clotting disorder. Maybe because you have like antiphospholipid, you know, you have something where potentially your body may clot, and it may clot in the placenta, and it could actually end in miscarriage or stillbirth or something like that. So the benefit of taking a, you know, light blood thinner in this way, it supersedes any of the negatives that it might have on the fetus. So mm-hmm. we cannot say that there's no negatives for daily aspirin use in pregnancy, but again, life versus no life, you know, so this is sometimes how the categories are made and the situations are made. With herbs, of course, nothing is really given those categories because that's a pharmaceutical concept. Right. So anyways, I just wanted to kind of give that background. And then another thing to think about too, is that if you are pregnant or breastfeeding and you feel like you're getting sick much more frequently than normal, or you're not recovering, or something is just going on deeper. There's a good chance that it could be something going on deeper. So we need to remember that we are also in a state of a lot of energy and nutrients out in pregnancy and breastfeeding. And so, and then you're just more susceptible to having like the negative sequelae of certain physiological processes that are trying to adapt, where like they maybe go haywire. So for instance, in pregnancy, anemia is very common, and anemia is, you know, where maybe you're not having enough iron getting to your tissues in one way or another, or whether it's the red blood cells or it's the actual iron transport. There's lots of different kind of ways, but it's common because of our blood volume increasing as much as it does in pregnancy. There's always going to be this kind of like adjusted looking anemia on lab values. That's why it's important to get a good, full, complete lab value of your iron tests. So you want to get hemoglobin and hematocrit, those will be on something called a CBC, which is a complete blood count. But you also want to get a total iron, a ferritin, something called a TIBC, and an iron saturation. And your doctor should be able to look at all of these numbers together and decide, where are we on this scale? Ferritin is a really great one that's never run, unfortunately. I don't know, understand why. In the conventional sense, it's, I know, because ferritin is your iron storage molecule. And so your CBC that shows your hemoglobin and hematocrit might look really great. And mine always has, but my ferritin tanks out in pregnancy sometimes. Yep. And I mean, it's supposed to be it would be great for your ferritin to be like 50, 60, 70, something like that. I would say a lot of pregnant women dip down into like the 30s and it's like, okay, that's all right. But you know, it can also get down into the 20s and the teens. And at one point my ferritin was like 7.
I've ran labs on so many women, and I think maybe only 2 of like the hundreds I've ran labs on who had low ferritin actually had a low hemoglobin or hematocrit, and they had all the symptoms of anemia, you know, fatigue and all of that. And so I think it's a very poor marker in
to
women.
To only look at those.
Yeah.
It's like when people want to look at thyroid labs and they only run a TSH. So that's that's the next thing that I would say, is that your thyroid during pregnancy specifically, but also during postpartum, especially in the first couple of months postpartum, it's a very dynamic endocrine organ. So endocrine meaning hormone producing. And so it's going to have to, it ramps up for a little while, it ramps back down, it goes back up, it goes back down, because it's in this dynamic dance with what's happening in your body with building a baby. And then in the postpartum, as all of the rest of your hormones are adjusting back down, that does really much, very much affect your thyroid. Also, it's called like your HPA axis. It's your hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. Your thyroid is, you know, explicitly, whatever the word is more for very importantly involved in that.
It's very important.
Very important. Excellent. Man, I'm gonna have to look those up. Either way,
I don't even know. I can't even correct you on that.
It's okay.
Pregnancy brain.
This isn't a vocab podcast.
Can you spell it?
Actually, I probably can. I'm really
explicitly.
Okay, spelling me. It's really involved in that. And when we're not sleeping and we're adjusting now to the new patterns and rhythms of having a newborn, it can also kind of falter. There's something called postpartum thyroiditis, which is like where you have a period of acute hyperthyroidism. And that often just goes totally dismissed as anxiety and, you know, being a new mom and whatever. But also it's very common for people to have hypothyroidism during their postpartum time. And, you know, when you're breastfeeding or whatever, and that can manifest in these weird symptoms as well of being just always tired. And people will say, well, you have a new baby. And it's like, yeah, but this might be different. And we should make sure that this isn't playing into the experience of having a new baby. Also, hypo and hyper can affect milk supply too. So this is not about that. We should have a podcast about that in the future at some point. But
yeah,
I just wanted to highlight there may be things going on in your physiology that are not just that you have been exposed to a virus. If you feel like your immune system just cannot recover, and it's not from like a, you know, a heavy illness or something, or you're just continually getting sick, maybe you need to look into that with your doctor and get some more labs run. Really quick though, before I move on, I want to say though, for a proper thyroid panel, it would look like not just a TSH. TSH is important, but it's honestly, it's not even that important really, if we don't understand what the free fractions are going on. So you want to get total and free fractions of both T3 and T4. Ideally, we would also maybe get something called a reverse T3. And then we would look at the antibodies too. So there's a couple of different types of antibodies. If I was to choose just a couple to get, because they can be more expensive on lab, it would be more likely to get, or you would get the most information out of something like a TPO antibody and a TG antibody. There is TSI antibodies, and there's, what is it? The receptor, there's another receptor one. If we think that there is something like Graves happening, you can go ahead and get those on later on. If we think that it's starting to trend towards an autoimmune hyperthyroid or something like that. But don't just let your practitioner run a TSH, tell you that everything's fine, and then move on, because it just may not be.
Right, right. Yeah, it's really important. And the other thing I wanted to highlight, I mean, you're going to talk about stress and depletion, I think, next, and we'll get to this. But the other thing to just remember is, maybe it doesn't even go here. I don't know if it's not a good place to put it, but just if you have multiple kids, your exposure risk is so much greater. So even if you're someone who's like, I just like don't really get sick that much, or maybe you didn't get sick with your first baby, so that's how I was. I was pretty protected with my first baby, you know, with my first pregnancy. I just didn't go a lot of places. I didn't do a lot of things. So I never got sick during my first.
Well, it was COVID too. So you were trying to
Yeah, it was COVID. So I was actively trying to not get sick. And if that's the case, if you're, you know, and your second, third, whatever subsequent pregnancy from experience, just knowing that even if you're someone who maybe didn't experience it last time, thinking that maybe you just have a really good immune system and you're not going to get sick, it can just change a lot when you have little kids who are out and about, or if you take them to playgrounds, or if you're traveling or whatever. So knowing this stuff, even if you didn't have a past experience, because I was someone who's like, oh, I don't really get sick. I have such a good immune system. And I definitely got sick this time. So just keeping that in mind, that even if everything's good with you, it can just be that you're exposed a lot more.
Yeah. And, you know, like you've experienced too, you have this kind of lingering cough that's taken a long time, and that's really common. I think coughs can take weeks anyways, and just like a normal healthy person. But of course, in this state of pregnancy, there is lower inflammation states and higher inflammation states based on which trimester you're in. And so then there's also this sort of like immunocompromised factor that's on top of it. Also, I think with even just the pressure dynamics of our abdominal cavity, not being able to get a good full cough out.
Yeah.
Coughs are one of those things that can linger for a long time. And so anyway, there's stuff that can happen. And so we want you guys to know what the stress and depletion thing that I was going to mention was just that is another component of being postpartum and breastfeeding specifically too, but you can also be stressed and depleted during your pregnancy that will play a part in your overall immune system and immune health. And so having some tools under your tool belt of knowing how to care for yourself in a way in real time too, because a lot of the remedies that I'm going to mention and the things that I talk about in the course, which I'm only going to talk about a few here in the podcast, but check out the course, of course, if you want more information. A lot of them are most effective when we catch it in the first couple of days of the progression of the illness. The second that you start to show symptoms, that's going to be your best bet of being able to halt things or slow or shorten the progression. Okay, so I do want to kind of break down a couple of top remedies that I think that are really helpful for people. You can look into these in terms of, you know, the way that they're going to affect your immune system for colds and flus, or sometimes for a couple of them, we'll talk about allergies and then UTIs as well, which is what I do in the course. And I also give all of the dosage information there. Here, I just want people to get kind of an overview of it so that you know the breadth of what we're working with, because it's actually kind of a lot. It's cool and it's exciting. So
yeah, I'm going to talk about it. So exciting.
It's so exciting.
I just want to mention too that my family was in town and my sister-in-law was like, I'm starting to feel sick. Like, what should I take? You know, because we have such an arsenal of stuff. And I was telling her all the things, you know, she's taking zinc and needed immune support. And I was giving her this cold snap, which is like a Chinese medicine formula.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, a bunch of other things. And it was so funny because she messaged me after flying and she's like, I don't know what you gave me, but she's like, I'm like totally better. And it's because we caught it so early. So with something viral, if you can catch something really early, you really can like change the trajectory, which in the conventional model, we just don't have. Like if there was a pharmaceutical that could do that, it would be a bajillion dollar industry. Then they just don't have it.
Well, and the thing is that with viruses, it's a viral load issue a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So if we can knock down some of the viral load, so that your immune system can get on top of it and fight it. And, you know, if it's new and novel, your body's never seen it, then no, that's not going to happen. But if you have some level of antibody production to it and it's a mutation of some other strain, which is the vast majority of the situation that's going to happen for us, we just need to give our bodies a little bit more time for them to come back and fight it. Also, symptoms are the sign that your body is fighting it. Like that is what a symptom is, right? Like when we get a runny nose, when we start sneezing, when we feel fatigued, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, okay. So for the herbs, the herbal piece of this, I think this really surprises a lot of people that echinacea, because the echinacea is a very strong herb, but the echinacea is safe in pregnancy. This is actually one that has quite a good reputation behind it and that most people would be in full support of. We also know things like, well, and here's the thing with echinacea too, is that it is like a full spectrum antimicrobial to some degree or another, meaning that it is also, it's antiviral, but it's also antibacterial. It's also antifungal. So if you are on track of potentially, you know, some kind of a bacterial infection, echinacea is a great one to choose. I think it can be great for something like a flu, a cold. I mean, yes, you can take echinacea for a cold, but something where there's a flu and there's a lot of mucus, or if it's a cold that has a lot of mucus, especially nasal mucus that might become a sinus infection, or maybe there's, you know, fluid in your inner ear that might become infected in a bacterial manner. These are great choices. Respiratory, echinacea is an amazing respiratory herb. So if you're having this like hacking, coughing, lung thing with mucus, and maybe you're coughing something up, it's a great one for that. There's a lot of other things, and UTIs as well. If we do think that we're having a UTI, you can begin this. It's not my very top choice for UTI. I'll get to that later, but I want everyone to think about echinacea as like nature's antibiotic to an extent. And it's a really great one for children as well, which I have a different course on, you know, natural cold and flu care for pediatrics. But I think that it is amazing in that it is safe in the pregnant population, the child population, the breastfeeding population. Echinacea is an amazing one if we think that we're having a mastitis that's a bacterial mastitis. You can dose it quite high in that instance as well. You were going to say something?
Yeah, I just want to mention there's different ways to take echinacea. Obviously, there's capsule form, there's tincture form, there's glycerite form. But just so people know, echinacea can make your tongue feel weird. So some people think they're having an allergic reaction, and that's just echinacea. So echinacea can make your tongue tingle. So just know if you take it and then you're like calling the emergency room because you think you're having an allergic reaction, it's not that. Echinacea just can have a really interesting feel on your tongue.
And it probably arguably one of the worst tasting tinctures.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. If you can get it in a glycerite form, that's probably ideal. I don't know how you like to do it, but that's how I have it.
Yeah, or I just say put it in some water. Even just putting a couple of the dropperfuls in like a shot glass of water will make your experience much better. But to just directly put echinacea tincture on your tongue is an experience.
Which we did in school. We had to taste every herb. And I remember that one being like, whoa, it's definitely not like elderberry, which tastes so delicious. So just know that.
And it does, it's going to make everything taste like salt water for a very long time, for like an hour. So just know that about that. Okay. Another one that I think that people probably know is elderberry. Like you mentioned, elderberry is a great one if we can catch the illness in the very beginning, I would say within the first 48 hours. Beyond that, elderberry is not your girl. I would not be going to elderberry when I'm 5 or 6 days into a flu. You're literally just going to waste your product. It's not that, and it's not going to be the one that you want to choose in that instance. Yes, maybe it has a very, very microscopic help or a benefit, but it's just not going to be the one. You see what I'm saying? Like, so we have to think about if we're looking at a timeline, a chronological, you know, an XY axis, these herbs are going to have their like peak efficacy time, and then it's going to drop off sharply. Echinacea has a pretty good, like, I would say it can be helpful at multiple different points throughout. Elderberry is not that. Elderberry is only going to be helpful in that very beginning phase. You know, and I also know a lot of parents will give their kids elderberry every single day during a cold and flu season. I don't really jive with that. I feel like anything every single day is just not usually the way that we need to go. During a known exposure, like say you were on an airplane, you're pregnant, somebody was coughing, sneezing next to you. Sure. Like you can take that now for a couple of days, and you know, maybe it will prevent you from getting that illness, or it'll help knock it down appropriately so it never becomes something that's like a big deal. But I just don't really get behind the idea of taking something every day. One other thing about elderberry that's really great is that it does have a kind of a minor, but it's still there, antihistamine effect. So if you are the miserable pregnant person or breastfeeding person in the, you know, spring or fall with allergies, it can be helpful for that as well.
That's great. Yeah. And just to mention, this is why things like Needed's immune powder has elderberry in it. And this is why it's nice to order these things way before you're sick, like having all this stuff stocked up, because you'll need it like either to prevent or right away when you get sick versus, oh my gosh, I've been sick for 4 days. Let me order some stuff.
Yeah. And then it takes 3 or 4 days to get there. It's a really good point. I feel like most of the time, two people start to feel something in the evenings before they go to bed. Mm-hmm. And if you can get some remedies in you, maybe do something like wet socks, which I'll talk about, and get a really good night's sleep, you might completely nip it in the bud. So, another one to note is a lemon balm tincture. So Melissa officinalis is another one that's considered safe in pregnancy and breastfeeding. It does have a bit of an anti-fever effect, which is nice. It helps with your nervous system, kind of calms you down. It's considered a nervine herb, a relaxant. It helps with pain relief. So it's nice for maybe if you're having like a headache or something like that. It's kind of on the milder end. It wouldn't necessarily be my very first choice for some things, but I think that it's a good one, especially for children. I love giving lemon balm tincture at night for children who are ill that have a viral thing. Lemon balm tincture is not going to be my choice for something that's bacterial, because it's just, that's not the way that it functions. But for a virus, yes, it can help you with that better sleep for sure, especially if you're having a hard time sleeping at night. And, you know, sleep is going to be one of our main ways that we're going to recover from illness. So anything we can do to help increase our sleep is going to be awesome. There's a company called Wish Garden that I love. Wish Garden makes multiple pregnancy safe herbal blends. One of them is literally just called Immune Boost in Pregnancy. And it's a combination of echinacea, burdock, cleavers, and marshmallow roots. So their angle here is the mix of the antimicrobial echinacea mixed with lymphatic drainage herbs. Because the lymph tissue is where all of our immune system, our immune cells are lying, and they need to be moved around the body. Our lymphatics don't have muscles around them to pump the lymph fluid around in the way that we have muscles around our arteries that are going to then help pump our blood flow. So the lymph needs to be moved physically by us getting up and moving around. This is why exercise and movement is so important. But I mean, it's just one of the reasons. But also we can take things that help. We can take herbs that are lymphatic drainage herbs that will also help kind of move all of this fluid through. And you can kind of think about it like being the garbage too. It's like all the dead, you know, the white blood cells that have fought and attacked, and then all of the dead garbage cleanup, the debris, the macrophages that are taking care of this part of your immune system. So I wanted to mention that. Then of course there's all these homemade things that I mentioned in the course. Like you can make like a honey onion cough syrup, which is actually extremely effective and tastes really good. There are cough syrups, fire ciders, different ways to use herbal teas. And then one that I will say that's not safe in pregnancy, but is safe in breastfeeding, that is an absolute heavy hitter that I'm obsessed with, is andrographis. Andrographis is very effective, again, only in the beginning of the illness, but I have seen it again and again and again and again and again, completely nip things in the bud. I wanted to mention those for herbs. And then a quick note about essential oils, which is that I'm not a huge fan. I think that they can be used, you know, it's nice to diffuse them. I'm not a big fan of internal essential oil use, especially not in the populations of pregnancy, breastfeeding, and children. I know that there's a lot of people who would disagree with this, and that's okay. I have heard it a couple of different times now from professors who are much my elder that some of the sickest populations that they work with are those that of people who are using essential oils all the time internally, because these are very, very concentrated forms of herbs. Herbs are powerful and potent and real, and they push pathways and they cause physiological change. We had to make essential oils one time in our organic chemistry lab in college. I don't know if you had to do that, but I remember how much plant we had to use to get one drop of the oil. And it blew my mind, because it just shows you how potent they are. And when people use them really willy-nilly or like layered on top of layer, you know, they rub them on their feet and then they're diffusing them and then they're taking them internally and then they're doing this and that and the other, it can sometimes just overwhelm the system. And especially in the case of children, we don't want to give too many things all at once. We want to just, you know, right the ship a little bit, and then they should be able to take off on their own. Now, in the situation of pregnancy and breastfeeding, we are sensitive in different types of ways than we are just a normal woman that's not pregnant and breastfeeding. If you're not pregnant and breastfeeding, you can do whatever you want to do. But when you are pregnant and breastfeeding, you are also now inextricably linked to someone else. So you need to be considering them and their physiology too. So that's a little word about essential oils. I don't know if you have anything to add about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, herbs are so cool because they do so many things, and they do so many things which can make them not cool. So
yeah, exactly.
For example, like lavender, you know, lavender is great for anxiety. It helps people sleep, but it also can be estrogenic. So like, let's say you're pregnant with a little boy like me, you know, I probably wouldn't want to be the person who's like diffusing lavender, rubbing lavender all over myself, like just dousing myself in lavender every day, because it's possible that that could be shifting his hormonal composition a little bit. And so there's just different things like that that we just want to be aware of.
Yeah, we just won't know the impact of that. And it's like, what's the benefit there? Like, do we just need to be constantly thinking about the risk-benefit ratio.
Yeah, and I think with oils, like there is a time and a place. Like when I was really sick, I found, like, I was making a rub, and you always want to dilute them, right? Like in a coconut oil or whatever. But I was making a rub with eucalyptus and mint to help, because I had so much like congestion and everything, and that would help me get through the night to sleep. But as soon as I didn't need it, I stopped. It's not like I'm doing that every night. I'm not doing that for like weeks and weeks. I didn't take it internally. So it's just something to use when you need it, just like any other. There's natural medicine that is used acutely and for certain situations, and it's very different than something like a prenatal that you take every day.
Yeah, and actually, that's a great note. All of these things would be things you're only taking during these acute illness times or during the prevention phase, but this is not something you're going to just take on a daily.
Let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Stress management can come from multiple different angles, including exercise, proper diet, and restful sleep. But did you know you can also support your stress response using herbs like ashwagandha, shatavari, rhodiola, milky oats, and holy basil? These adaptogenic herbs are the ones found in Needed's stress support product, which has become one of my absolute favorite supplements I take. It's safe to take while trying to conceive and while nursing, and at any point in your motherhood besides during your pregnancy. These herbs are commonly used in traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurvedic medicine to support cortisol's response to daily life and to promote restful sleep. Go to thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 20% off. Again, go to thisisneeded.com and save 20% with the code HEALTHYMOTHER.
Okay, back to the show.
Okay, so then I wanted to talk about some of the nutrients or nutraceutical. A nutraceutical is basically just like a supplement that is, I mean, it's like another way of saying supplement. It has a form. It's not necessarily a whole herb. It's probably a part or a constituent of a plant, but it's also not a pharmaceutical, you know, it's like whatever. There's just it's a term. So like you've mentioned, the Needed immune support powder is absolutely amazing. It also tastes extremely good. I have a very hard time saving it so that I only take it when it's necessary because it tastes so good. And I'm a little kid with that, but I love it. And it's safe for the entire family too. So you can give it to your kids. You can take it while you're pregnant, while you're breastfeeding. I love that. And while you're not as well, and also for your partner. So it's a mix of elderberry, zinc, pre and probiotics, arabinogalactans, and beta-glucans. So those last two, which maybe you've never heard of before, arabinogalactans and beta-glucans, they both help increase the function and proliferation of certain immune cells is basically what we need to know about that. Elderberry functions on a way of sort of preventing viral replication. Zinc in a similar way, preventing viral replication, and then pre and probiotics because the microbiome is inextricably linked. That's what I was trying to say.
Inextricably.
Yes.
Spell that backwards.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, seriously. While jumping up and down. It is, the immune system is inextricably linked to your microbiome. And so when we are giving ourselves even just an acute, that's actually one of the best ways to use probiotics is during an acute illness because it can really help with that acute immune period. So love the immune powder by Needed. And if you use code HEALTHYMOTHER, you can save 20% as well. You go to thisisneeded.com, HEALTHYMOTHER, you just type it into the discount code area and it should knock it off there for you. It's one of the ones that I always have in stock, especially because I have four kids, you know?
Oh my gosh. It's like our favorite. It's our favorite thing.
Yeah. It's awesome. So, okay. Another one that's a nutraceutical that I think is really effective and something we need to become good friends with is NAC. So it's N-acetylcysteine. N-acetylcysteine sometimes can get a bad rap in this population of pregnancy and breastfeeding because it does help support detox. Now, I'm not worried about the small amount of detox that might be happening when we take this product for like a week during an illness, especially if there's a lot of mucus in this illness in our nasal passages, sinus, or lungs, because NAC is a mucolytic. And what that means is that it makes the mucus thinner so that we can expectorate it out. We can get it out and so that it's not sitting in there lingering, preventing our perfusion of our oxygen exchange or maybe getting, you know, festering and getting a bacterial infection. It's really, really great for that. It's a decongestant. And it does support glutathione production, which is a good antioxidant, but we need antioxidants while we're acutely ill. And that's okay. And if there's a minor amount of detoxification happening in that phase, I don't care. You know what I mean? It's not a concern. Okay. And then of course, things like vitamin D3, that is always going to be a great one, but we need to know your levels too, because you might have rocking vitamin D levels and you don't need to supplement, or you might have completely tanked out, bottomed out vitamin D levels and your dose is going to be much higher for a short period of time, but to get it back up. There's also something called a vitamin D hammer, which you can do, which is again, the most useful in the very beginning phases of an illness. But if you already have a really set level of vitamin D, we don't want to be doing something like a vitamin D hammer. Vitamin D is one of those fat soluble vitamins. It's also a hormone. People are like in, you know, all up in arms. They think that vitamin D supplementation is like the devil now. I don't know. It's so funny to me, but it's like, okay, do whatever you're going to do. I mean, if you can get it from the sun, that's great. Obviously that would be ideal. Or get it from, you know, raw grass-fed milk and cheese and oysters and like whatever, you do your thing. But most people are going to need to supplement at some point or another. And it is an extremely important thing. Here's what I'll say about all of that controversy about vitamin D supplementation is that at the end of the day, we know all of the research papers of the blood level vitamin D of people when it is under a certain level have so much higher comorbidities that I don't really care how you get your vitamin D level of that blood level up. I don't really care because we know that when it's down like that, when you're pregnant, low vitamin D levels are associated with things like autism and ADD, ADHD, neurodevelopmental problems of your child. It's like, we cannot be messing around with this being like, yeah, well, we should get it from nature. Yeah, I agree. Listen, we're naturopathic doctors. I totally agree we should get it from nature. That's just not, it doesn't intersect with reality for most people. If it is intersecting with reality for you, sweet. But we need to just be careful when we make blanket statements, which is like, no one should be supplementing with vitamin D. It's like, whoa, okay. Yeah. Are there other factors? Yes. Does vitamin D need magnesium? And does it interplay with vitamin A? And yes, of course, there's a lot of other things going on with this. And it would be ideal to just eat liver and get it all at the same time. And sometimes people do that. But I just also don't think that people are thinking about the way that we know certain disease progressions and comorbidities function with these levels.
Yeah. And I mean, even being a doctor for years in Southern California with people who are in the sun every single day, their levels are not adequate. I've met maybe two patients who do not supplement, who have adequate levels. Everyone else is deficient, even who are sun goers who eat really well. And there's just certain people that have vitamin D receptor genetic mutations, sort of like the MTHFR with folate. So it's important to just know your levels. And yeah, like the blanket statement of like supplements are evil is just, it's just not true. And I mean, yeah, it would be great for us to like be back in the day, but we just have a very different world than we did back in the day. Exactly. Like it's just not the same world.
So, I mean, those are our two cents on that. I would love to hear people's thoughts on that personally. So if you want to let us know, then we're all yours. Okay. Another one that I think is really underestimated, but can be really powerful is a nasal spray like X-Lear. So it looks like people want to say X clear. I don't know. There's no C in the word. I don't know why, but it looks like you should have a C in there, but it's not because you're like thinking clear, like you're clearing out your nose. But X-Lear, is a nasal spray that's like a saline spray, but it also contains a molecule called xylitol. And xylitol it prevents the adherence of microbes, both bacteria and viruses, from adhering to the inner mucosal wall of your nose and back of your throat. This is how we are exposed to the vast majority of pathogens is through our nose. They land up in there, they get up in there, they start to infiltrate the mucosal membrane lining, and then they replicate. And so if we can be taking something that's sort of coating that mucosal lining and it's helping knock down those viral loads or prevent the bacterial adhesion, it will in the end then help our progression of illness or potentially prevent it from happening altogether. There actually is some good research behind X-Lear, or maybe it wasn't X-Lear name brand, but it was like a xylitol nasal spray and COVID viral loads, mm-hmm. which is cool.
Yeah.
It's a really good one for known exposure. Again, that airplane analogy, somebody sneezing next to you, you take X-Lear. X-Lear is one thing that I think is a fine thing to do daily. Like, you know, use it once a day, or what I sometimes suggest for parents with kids is keep a bottle in the car. Like when you go pick them up from school, if they're going to school, you know, spray their nose out as they come back into the car because they've been exposed to the different things all day. And it's not to say that it's terrible for your kids to get sick. It's not. Now, pregnant and breastfeeding, we can do without.
Yeah. You know?
We don't want to go trying to get sick while we're pregnant and breastfeeding. It's just not necessary. There's not really benefit, and it just makes our lives harder. So, okay. Yeah. Then there's things like zinc and vitamin C, probiotics. I'm not going to speak to all of these things, but just know that there is several of them. Now onto homeopathics. I think that one of the homeopathics that has really changed my life for the better in several ways of nipping things in the bud and my children as well. And here's the thing about homeopathy. There's always going to be haters. People don't understand it. They don't get it. Whatever. It's like, fine. I understand. It does feel like magic and it does kind of confuse me and I don't really know how to explain it all that well. But when you use homeopathy on children and animals who do not know what you were doing, the placebo effect just can't really work in that situation. You know what I mean? And you watch it happen and it's like, what just happened right there? I think it's a bioenergetic medicine. It works on the bioenergetic field. And we know that that's a real thing around us. That's a measurable known phenomenon. We are electrochemical beings. We have a pulse. And I think that not a pulse, like in a heartbeat way, but we have this like electrochemical kind of energy created around us. And I think that it wouldn't be completely illogical to think that there's a medicine that could function on that level. And I don't know if there's a way that we can prove that homeopathy does that, but that is probably the best way that I can think about that happening.
I mean, the quantum physics world can prove it, but you know, a lot of people don't understand quantum physics and
we're not,
but yes, when you see it, I'm like such a fan of homeopathy because I've seen amazing magical things. It's just, you can't deny it. And the people who say it doesn't work are the people who don't have any experience with it or they don't know how to use it correctly.
Yep, so I fully agree.
Yeah.
I fully agree. So anyway, the particular one that I think is just an absolute slam dunk must have is called Aconitum napellus. Yep. So Aconitum it's so good. Okay. Also really quick, I just have to say, because I know this is always a confusing topic, all homeopathy, the combination remedies, the single remedies, whatever, the drops, the pellets, the melt away tabs, they can all be used in pregnancy and breastfeeding. They can also be used for newborns and all children
because
of all
ages. Because they are a diluted form of the thing. So when you see aconite or you see something like belladonna, homeopathic belladonna is not the herb belladonna, which is poisonous. We are not giving people like the herb belladonna. Homeopathic belladonna is 100% safe. There is not one safety risk for it at all. It is – there's like – yeah, it's all on an energetic frequency. So –
yeah. So don't
Google like belladonna. Of course, your conventional doctor is going to be like, don't take belladonna. It's like, that is not belladonna.
It's not belladonna. It's homeopathic. Right. Yeah, exactly. So people always, they ask, they want to know, well, what about this particular remedy? Is this one safe in pregnancy? Is this one safe
in
pregnancy? It's like, no, they're all the same. They are all the exact same in terms of their safety net and, you know, potential efficacy. I can't say that they're all going to be efficacious for you because if you don't give yourself the correct remedy for your particular symptom profile, then yeah, nothing's going to happen. So that is one thing about it. But aconite, specifically aconitum, those two names go hand in hand. Aconite, aconitum is a great one for the very first sign of illness. Again, so there's so many things here that are on the first sign of illness. If you start to feel like, oh man, something I might like, what's going on here? I'm starting to get a little run down, or especially if anything comes on suddenly or out of nowhere or fast.
Yeah.
I love to reach for aconitum in those situations, and you give yourself a dose. Maybe you take another dose in that day, but maybe not even. And I have just seen it happen time and time again, where it really nips the manifestation of that illness completely from happening at all in the first place. And I guess, yeah, who knows? We don't have a crystal ball. Maybe nothing was going to happen. Who knows? We don't know. But you know that feeling though, when you're starting to get sick, and if you can take something, then it's a great one. That's my top remedy for that situation. It's called, you can just take 30C is fine. You're going to see different potencies on the bottle. You're going to see 6X or 6C, 30C, 200C. I think that most people for most situations are going to be completely fine with everything to be in just that 30C potency. So this is not a homeopathy episode, but I just, you know, we have to kind of like give some education as we go along. Belladonna is a great one for fevers. So is pulsatilla. I'm going to go through these just like a quick couple that I think would be good to have on hand. Another one is Arsenicum album. Arsenicum is kind of good for like the just Joe Schmo regular cold, where you're like, you just kind of feel tired and weak and, you know, you can't really warm up, or you're a little like restless, anxious, you have a runny nose. Like, you know, also Arsenicum can be good for like a food poisoning or a norovirus type situation where there's vomiting, diarrhea. Drosera is one of my also top favorites. I would say if I had to pick three homeopathics ever, I would pick aconitum, belladonna, and Drosera for illness. Belladonna for that like fever profile, aconitum for the very beginning of the illness, and then Drosera for that middle of the night cough that's just like tickling in the back of your throat and you're hacking and you cannot stop coughing and you feel like you're going to vomit almost, or you're gagging from it. That is, and it's worse at night. It's like as soon as you lay down in your warm, comfy bed, you just start coughing and you can't sleep. Drosera is your girl for that. The last one is oscillococcinum. It's that like really long word with the O. People are like, what is this? That's a really good one for like a flu, something that is not just a cold. It is actually a flu. There's fever, chills, malaise, body aches, all of that. That is going to be more your remedy for a flu situation. Okay, so then the last thing that I wanted to talk about here, well, no, I guess it's not the last thing, but using hydrotherapy. So of course, food is medicine. We know this, right? And this is not going to be a nutrition episode, but I feel like a lot of our listeners know a lot of these things. We want to focus on protein, hydration. Protein, because your body, all of your immune cells are conglomerates of literally amino acids that are proteins, right? So we need to be having the building blocks there for our body to make the white blood cells and other immune factors in order to fight the illness. Also, it's very common for people to not eat very much at all when they are sick, and then they lose a lot of muscle mass, and then that doesn't help things, and yada, yada. So we want to focus on nutrient density as we can, focus on protein, balance your blood sugar. Also, pregnancy and breastfeeding are not the time to not eat. I know that it's hard when you're not sick or when you're sick, but that is not the time to be like, I'm fasting through this flu. Like, no, we do not fast when we're pregnant. And ideally we don't fast while we're breastfeeding either, because you can, and maybe likely will, lose your milk supply. And so these are time periods where we are forcing ourselves to eat if we need to. You know, we can focus on bone broths and broth-based soups and different things that taste good to us, whatever it is. I don't care actually what it is. You just need to get it in if it's coming down to that kind of a point. Every time we have an opportunity to eat, we're either stressing the system or we're building it back up. Obviously, in this point of acute illness, we want to be building it back up as much as we possibly can. You can do fermented foods, you know, sauerkraut. And if you're doing dairy, sometimes we need to take a break from dairy when we're acutely ill, but sometimes people don't feel that they need to, and that's okay. Also, you can include more things in your cooking, like garlic and onions, those warming spices, warming foods.
I just want to hop in here. My husband and I experientially have noticed if we're about to get sick, if we drink sauerkraut juice, it can also sometimes nip it in the bud. And that's, again, from a microbiome perspective, but just taking a spoonful of sauerkraut juice, you know, a few times a day would be an awesome remedy.
Yep. And that's back to the probiotic situation, right? Like it helps acutely with the immune system. So it's awesome. And then staying hydrated is also, you know, important. I really love the Redmond Relight powder. I think it's tasty and it's great. Now, some other things that we can be doing that are sort of like home remedy maybe, or outside of the realm of taking a supplement or eating a food, would be something like chiropractic adjustments. That could be helpful. That's maybe more for preventative, or if you are acutely having like an ear infection, something that, or a sinus infection, coughs, also anything respiratory, upper respiratory, I think can be really benefited from chiropractic care, because helping keep our spinal alignment correct means that all of the nerves that are coming out of our spine that innervate our entire body are going to be functioning the best way possible. And, you know, we have to upregulate a lot of our systems to kind of go in overdrive during illness. And so we want that all to be attuned the best that we can. Then taking things like magnesium baths. So whether that's Epsom salts or magnesium like flakes, you know, chloride flakes, something like that. I think that magnesium baths are underestimated. Now, during pregnancy, you want to keep the bath water the temperature of your body. So like maybe 99 the hottest, you know, maybe 100 the hottest, but we don't want to go hotter than that because we don't want to raise your overall core body temperature. But when you're breastfeeding, you can go as hot as you want. And I love to go hot, hot, hot. Like I'm almost passing out when I'm getting out of the bath. I pretend it's like a hot springs. But again, that's another one that at the very first sign of getting run down or you know, first sign of illness, if I take a super hot bath and sweat it out, I feel like that helps so much. Similarly, saunas. Now, IR saunas, you do not want to be doing when you're pregnant. And breastfeeding, maybe not often, or maybe if your baby's under 6 months, there will be a level of detoxification that's happening in an infrared sauna. So that's something like, you know, if we can stay away from that, but you can sweat in some other way, but infrared is just going to push that detox pathway even more. So sweat in a different kind of sauna, like a wet sauna or something like that. Now, wet socks is something I mentioned earlier, and that is a hydrotherapy trick that, again, I always have said this too, that like, I think that going to naturopathic medical school was worth it for me just in this one particular tip. There's several tips that, you know, several things that made it worth it to me, but wet socks is an incredible immune system boost and help.
Amazing.
The way that you do it really quickly, and this is all explained more in the course, is just that you take like a pair of little like wet cotton socks, get them wet, wring them out, cold, right? They're cold. You put them on your feet. Then you put dry, regular, just warm wool socks or camping socks. They're not usually going to be 100% wool. That's just kind of hard to find, but like a wool blend. You put them on top of the wet socks, then you go to bed. Now, yes, you're sleeping in socks. Some people hate that. Just get over it. It is what it is. We're trying to do it for like 3 to 5 nights in a row. And it is incredible. There are a couple of contraindications for wet socks, meaning like things that we don't want to be using it in this situation of, like if there's any open wounds on your feet, if you have a cardiovascular issue, if you have Raynaud's, some kind of like a vascularization problem, then yeah, maybe not, we're not using the hydrotherapy techniques. But wet socks are safe in pregnancy and breastfeeding. They're also an amazing tool for little kids when they get sick. I'm a huge fan. Do you ever use wet socks on baby?
Yeah. And I've literally stopped colds from just wet socks at night. I mean, it sounds so silly, but it's so, so, so powerful.
Yep. So powerful. Okay. And then another couple ones to think about would be like nebulizing and neti pots. So when we can physically remove some of these, you know, the mucus in our nose where the viral or bacterial load is growing, it can really do a big help to the whole thing. One time I had a full-on bacterial sinus infection. I know it. And it was really gnarly. I've never had anything like that when I was pregnant with Sloan, my third. And I was maybe one day, I was giving myself another 24 hours. I was like one day away from going and getting antibiotics because it was so bad. I was in so much pain. The snot was disgusting. It was very, very much bacterial. I had a little fever. I was like, this is going badly. And I did, amongst many things, I really ramped up my neti pot use with the X-Layer packets. So X-Layer makes a neti pot rinse with the xylitol in it. And I think it was a huge part of it for me. Also nebulizing, also all the herbs and everything. I was taking huge amounts of garlic and all sorts of different things. But man, I was really, really impressed with myself because I thought, here I go. I'm going to go to the get some antibiotics. But you know, sometimes it can turn around. So, okay. And then really quickly, because I wanted to mention for seasonal allergies, if you are pregnant, you can't take my main heavy hitter, but you could take something like it's called quercetin and nettles by Designs for Health. You could take that while you're pregnant. But if you're not pregnant and you're only breastfeeding, the mecca of allergy remedies is called Dehist by Designs for Health. And the reason that you can't take it in pregnancy is because it contains some enzymes like bromelain that we don't want to, you know, if maybe they destabilize the amniotic sac or something, it's not safe. But while you're breastfeeding, you can take it. And Dehist is incredible. It even functions on things like cat allergies or pet dander allergies. Like if you're maybe going to a friend's house and you know that that's going to be a thing and you're going to be sneezing and having a histamine response. But if it's like, you know, a couple of weeks in the spring or the fall where you are, you know, the pollen or whatever it is, that's a great one to know about. There also are homeopathics that can be really good. Histaminum, Euphrasia, the allergy combo meds, or Allium Sepa, et cetera. And then really quickly to end on UTIs. UTIs are really frustrating because there can be asymptomatic UTIs in pregnancy that are just happening that wouldn't be found out except for on a dipstick, where when we look on the dipstick, we see that there's leukocytes, which are white blood cells, which can indicate that there's some, you know, immune activity happening. Now, in the absence of also the nitrites being positive, nitrite, I always forget which one it is, but that is, both of them are positive, we're rocking a bacterial infection here. It's very common though for women to go pee on the dipstick. The nitrite is negative, but there is positive leukocytes and they are still prescribed antibiotics. Do we understand what is happening when a pregnant woman is taking antibiotics willy-nilly for something that may not actually even be an infection, especially when it's asymptomatic, there's nothing happening there. Like time and time again, I mean, how many times is that going to happen potentially in a pregnancy? And so there's conversations that need to be happening with providers where it's like, hey, what is going on here? Is this actually, can we go and maybe send it off for a culture and see? Because if there's nothing growing there, we don't want to be taking rounds of antibiotics willy-nilly. Now, I will say UTIs are extremely important to be watching carefully, and they can progress into something called kidney infections. Kidney infections can cause sepsis. They can cause preterm labor, they can cause death of the fetus, they can cause a big bad issues. Okay, I'm not trying to freak anybody out, but they are not to be taken lightly. So there is some, you know, management that needs to be happening with a practitioner, unless you're, you know, you can do your own thing, I guess. Everybody has their own autonomy and consent there, but to know what's happening with your body or to just not be taking it too lightly. If you do think that you are having a true UTI and it's not getting better and it's only getting worse, this is a good time and place for antibiotics. But my little rant in the beginning is just that I think that it's frustrating when people are given no other option, any other way to manage it, when there is some other ways to manage it. And those two things would be something called D-Manos, and then a combination product a proprietary blend product of cranberry that's usually called Cranactin, but there's other ways that you can get that in there. Both of these products, cranberry in general, in this kind of concentrated form called Cranactin, or D-mannose, both of them function on preventing the adherence of the bacteria on the mucosal membrane wall, just like xylitol. So they are similar in that way. So D-mannose is an oral, both of these would be oral supplements that you take. And by the time they get down to your bladder, when they are going through your, you know, kidneys, your whole genitourinary system, and they're getting excreted and you know, peed out, they are creating this little coating along the wall of your mucosal membrane of your bladder, your urethra, everything, your ureters even, and it can prevent that bacterial adhesion. So it's something that you need to be taking like frequently throughout the day for several days through to the end of symptoms and beyond a couple of days as well, so that you are really making sure that it's all gone, and then retesting too, to make sure that there's not some kind of like low level UTI that's hanging out. But it just is a really good thing to know about and have on hand. And even when you have, if you have children, and girls are much more susceptible to UTIs, boys can get UTIs, but it's much more often a girl thing, to know how to be able to look at a situation and try something for maybe 24 hours, see, is it getting better? Is it getting worse? Do we need to go get antibiotics? Maybe having some home dipsticks and understanding this situation before just running off and taking, like, and I speak about this from personal experience because I was one of those little kids that never wanted to stop playing and go pee. And so I would just hold my pee all the time. So then I got UTIs all the time. So then I would get a UTI, I would get antibiotics. It would destroy my gut. It would destroy everything. I'd be so much more susceptible the next time. Maybe a couple weeks would go by. Sometimes maybe a couple months. I mean, it was a continual process. I remember when I was maybe like 8 or 10 or something like that. Maybe I was even younger, going for some procedure where they were like trying to figure out why I kept getting these. And I did have a little bit of a ureter, like a reflux kind of ureter thing. But the level to which I was getting antibiotics was, I think now in retrospect and what I know about gut health, was directly correlated to them to be constantly on this like circus of antibiotics. And I had already been on many antibiotics as an infant from ear infections. So it was like just the perfect situation. And, you know, no education about nutrition or anything from given to my parents about how to help rebuild or, you know, help me in these different ways. So, and it's like, okay, there's one combo product by Solaray that's called D-mannose with granactin. It's like, how many times could I have potentially been given something like that, knocked down any bacteria that was happening, but also working on all the other factors at the same time. So I want pregnant women to know about these things, to have these options, talk about it with your provider. You're going to bring it to them. I am not responsible for whatever it is that you choose to decide to do. This is for educational purposes, but I think that knowing about it is better than not knowing about it.
Yeah, I love it. And I've done all these things during pregnancy. I can attest to that. And the very first sign that I'm like, something just doesn't quite feel right in my bladder, I start drinking. I have a powder that's cranactin and D-mannose, and it's delicious. It tastes great. And I have yet to get a UTI. So it's totally a testament to it working. So.
Yeah, it's awesome.
You are so knowledgeable. And for anybody who is pregnant, thinking about being pregnant or at all, I mean, your course is helpful for anyone really at all, because it's just teaching about immune support. I highly recommend getting it because I have it and it's great. And I think it's wonderful.
Well, so thanks. Good job. Okay. Well, thank you everybody. We hope that was helpful. Share it with anybody that, you know, is in this phase of life and could benefit from having some tools in their tool belt.
Before you go, there's one last thing. Did you know that we have a swag store now? The Healthy as a Mother store, where we sell amazing merchandise that is fun to wear. We have shirts and hats and sweatshirts. We have drinkware, bags, journals, all of the things that are healthy as a mother or related to motherhood in general. We would love if you could support our podcast by checking out our store. We love doing what we do, and it's really helpful to get the support and also to spread the word and share our amazing brand with the world. And you get some really cool, awesome stuff. One of my favorites is the crop sweatshirt and one of our glasses that we sell that says healthy as a mother. I just think it's so great. So head to www.healthyasamother.com/store to check out what we have. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store. And we are absolutely open to feedback. If there's something you would like to see that is not at the store, we can make a lot of different things there. So head over there, check it out, and we would love to see you sporting some Healthy as a Mother gear. And if you take a picture of yourself on Instagram, definitely tag Dr. Morgan and I, and we will be sure to share. Again, that is healthyasamother.com/store to check out our merchandise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Healthy as a Mother podcast. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and send to a friend who could benefit from this content.
We're so excited to share more on becoming and being a mother next time.
And please remember that the ideas and views of this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to serve as a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis or treatment of any illness or disease. Consult with your provider before integrating this information into your own care plan. And remember, a healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.